It's such a swindle. It has, you know how it's driving you crazy? It has driven me crazy for 15 years. I don't know when it started, but it started a long time ago. This whole scam about guided discovery, or this whole scam about let the players play, or this whole scam about it's a player's game. You heard that one, Ben? Oh, this is a player's game. What are you talking about? What do you mean it's a player's game? What do you mean it's a player's game? I know what they mean, but they took it to the extreme, Benny, so that nobody has to work. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's episode is all about establishing team culture. And while, yes, this term culture basically makes an appearance in all 350 plus odd some episodes of the 343 Podcast and makes appearances all over the internet, it is a bottomless pit with respect to all the things that should be discussed and aren't discussed, frankly, from particular angles. So today we jump into that topic of establishing team culture. How do coaches principally do it? How should they do it? How don't they do it? And, you know, all the pros and cons associated with each approach. One topic of particular note that makes an appearance here is how to handle star players. Because, you know, if you have a star player or two or three on a team, it's possible, you know, that they and or the families start feeling quite entitled and start accruing quite a bit of influence and power, if you will. And that can definitely spiral out of control and harm team culture. So how do we handle that? We discuss it quite a bit. And also the bottom 25% of the roster is quite important to pay attention to. It's not a coincidence that there's always this sort of duality or dichotomy, even in the broader sense of nation states or in the broader sense of the economy, where we always have the rich and the poor, and then you have the middle class, and how do you bring them all to a common understanding, a common purpose, and a common goal? It can be quite challenging. So we're not going to give you exact answers here because every situation is different, but I'm pretty sure there's quite a bunch of insights here as to how we've managed it and what it is that we've observed out there in the ecosystem. So hang on tight, strap in, and enjoy this one. But first, of course, coaches, go to 343coaching.com. We have free and premium programs for you there, coaching education programs, an entire methodology, an entire philosophy, a bunch of activities that are tried and true, but for real tried and true, not lip service. This is the product of decades of work from Brian Kliban, who helped pioneer a seismic shift in American soccer. You get to see him in his element as he executes the entire methodology with his actual teams and actual players. There is no scripting or rehearsals or none of that. The raw reality is what you get to witness. And if I need to say it, I'll say it again. Thousands of coaches have joined this program, and of those, the proportion who took it seriously have seen their careers catapulted to quite unprecedented levels, honestly. You have coaches at the highest levels of not just youth soccer, actually guys that became pros here in the United States have been part of the program. So please don't wait till tomorrow. Head on over today and sign up. Parents, you are a key piece of the puzzle. No question about it. And where you need to go is 343masterclass.com. What we do for coaches, we basically are trying to do for you as well, which is completely elevate your level of discernment and being able to guide your son or daughter in a much, much better way. Don't make the mistakes that so many folks make. Try to avoid those mistakes. And that is what 343masterclass.com helps you to do. So, okay, here we go with this episode on establishing team culture together with Benjamin Rogers. Enjoy. All right, man. What's the topic?
All right, brother. So this is a kind of a subtopic that comes up in a lot of our podcasts. I know many years ago you've had conversations on this in regards to culture and culture within the context of the team, you know, how to establish it, how to maintain it, and just the importance of having a strong culture within your group. There's a lesson or a module, I should say, within the 343 coaching education platform. It's titled Establishing Culture. And it's literally just a video of Brian. It's like maybe a 13-minute chat. And we've injected it into one of our previous podcasts. But it's his first interaction with, I think it was the Chivas U16 team or U17 team. And he kind of just lays out, you know, all of his expectations for the team. He says, you know, every single day he's going to non-negotiable. He's demanding 100% effort, 100% focus. But not only that, Gary, I think he's really showing the players that he cares about them. And a phrase that sticks out in that video is that he says, nobody's going to work harder for you guys than I am in terms of scouting your opposition, preparing you for the games, preparing you for training. So I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, one, that video, but also, two, how can coaches really establish a strong sense of culture on day one? And, you know, what is the importance of doing that? Because I think you can have a really good team with great players, but if you're lacking culture, then you're not going to find the same results. So yeah. I'll let you riff on that for a bit.
Well, first off, I don't remember the video exactly. I think I know which one you're talking about. He huddles everybody into a circle. And I'm pretty sure Sasha, who at the time was the academy director at Chivas USA, kind of introduced Brian as the new coach of the group. And right. It may have been the U18s. It may have been the U... I actually don't remember, Ben. But, you know, they were young men at that point, not little kids. But I think the principles apply even to the youngest ages, too. It's just the delivery of the message is a little bit different. And you kind of already hinted at it. You know, you want to set the tone early. And that means the very moment that you're first introduced as the coach of the group. You don't wait until the second session or next week or next month to try it and communicate to them what the culture is going to be like under your leadership. You have to do it. Those have to be the first things that you do with the group. It's not an activity. It's not playing soccer. It's telling them, hey, I'm here. These are the expectations. And this is where we're going. And this is where kind of where we've been, sort of thing. And I think the most important thing is, yes, like when you're on the pitch, when you cross those lines, then it is 100% effort, because that is what you can control. You cannot control whether I'm going to play you 90 minutes, 70 minutes, 12 minutes in the game. You have no control over that. You have no control over the referees. You have no control over all these external influences. But what you do have 100% control over is yourself and your effort, basically, is number one. So that has to be a principle that is incorporated into every individual in the group. And you also instill accountability. You're like, hey, you know, obviously if that's missing, then there's a big issue with you as a player. And obviously if there's more than one of you guys as a player who's missing that effort that you can control, then it becomes a team-wide issue. And then we're not going to be successful. So everybody has to do their part. Kind of that's like the speech about effort, yes? And then like you said, you have to make it a reciprocal thing. So the players also feel that it's not a dictatorship, even though it is a dictatorship, Benny. It's not a democracy. Soccer teams are not a democracy. You don't ask the players, okay, let's vote on, you know, who's going to be the starters this weekend or who's going to vote what position everybody's going to play. No, the dictator dictates. You don't want it to feel that way. And so you deploy this reciprocity of like, hey guys, nobody's going to work harder than I am. And which is true for you, right? You know, you show up, whatever it is, 2, 3 times, 4 times a week, 2 hours a day. And then on the weekends, and guess what? I do the same thing as the coach. I'm showing up those same days and those same times, but I do way more off of the field, right? I'm there earlier than all of you guys. I'm there later than all of you guys. And even when I'm not at the facility in the game, on the fields, I'm doing way more. I'm going to scout opposition. I'm writing training plans. I'm trying to get better and trying to figure out how the team can operate better. It is, I don't know, I would say 5 or 6 times the amount of energy and effort that goes into it versus you guys. And that's not to make you guys feel bad, but I want you to understand that I'm going to work harder than anybody. And it's for your benefit. And guess why it's going to be for your benefit? Because I'm incentivized that you guys develop and do better. Because if you do better, then the team does better. And if the team does better, guess what? I, as a coach, do better as well. So that kind of establishes the ground rules, Ben. And I'll end with this little segment. A couple episodes ago, we talked about being very good communicators with the parents with respect to playing time and what pay to play means and all that stuff, and what does the season outlook look like for their kids and the team. It's critical that on day one, just like with the parents, right, we said, let's communicate with the parents and tell them this is our philosophy regarding all of these topics, and so that the expectations are there and you don't get sideswiped. Everybody knows what this is about and there are no surprises, and it gives you a lot of strength there to, if shit hits the fan later down the road, you can rewind the tape and say, hey guys, remember when I first met you, blah, 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 blah. And what's really impactful, Ben, about the first time you meet somebody, that usually is the most impactful moment. Never a second chance to make a first impression, right? As the expression goes. So you want to get that piece right.
Yeah, the first impression is huge, Gary. And not just with the parents, but also the players. And we'll touch a little bit later on the episode about the parents, because I think the parents are huge in helping with the team culture. But just a couple of things that came to mind, Gary, when you were talking about Bryant's speech. The first one, right, is you talked about accountability, and not just accountability from the coach to the players, but you also need to make sure that the players are holding each other accountable, right? Bryant mentions in his speech, like, you know, if you see one of your teammates, they came to training and they're going through the motions or they're half-assed today, like, you tell them off, like, hey, Charlie, like, wake your ass up. And not because you're trying to be a dick, but because you care about your teammate and you want the best for them, right? And the other thing that came to mind is kind of this professional relationship that exists when you step onto the training pitch and in the game environments. And you have to have that relationship with the players of, hey, this is strictly business. But then on the other end, when you step off the field, you know, Brian says, like, you know, I'll be your best friend. Like, tell me about what's going on in your day. Tell me what's going on with your family. And for a lot of players that come from difficult backgrounds, and maybe some of them don't even have a father figure, you know, that's huge for them. And I think right away that creates like such a strong bond between the player and the coach. So for coaches out there, I think that's huge to let the players know, like, hey, listen, on the field, I'm going to be asking a lot of you. You know, this is a professional relationship, but off the field, whatever you need, you know, I'm here for you.
No, yeah, dude, you hit the nail on the head. It's, I talked about on the field expectations, and that now you graduated that to saying, hey, I'm more than just a coach to you, and whatever it is you need off the field, I'm here for you as well. No, and it's actually true. It's not just lip service, because, you know, obviously with Bryant, I've seen it myself, experienced it myself with all the players across the entire roster. It's not just the top end of the roster, because sometimes you know how coaches are, and I understand you can fall into the trap of being buddy-buddy with the best player, the best players, honestly, because they make you win games, right? So you want them happy. But that's not true with Bryant. Bryant is across the entire spectrum, from the middle of the roster to the very bottom of the roster. And frankly speaking, sometimes he is the best of humans and the most warm-hearted and takes up the most of his time with the bottom end of the roster and shows the most love off the field with the bottom end of the roster. Because if you're asking my opinion, I think most of the time those are the players who need it most, because they're struggling on the sporting side of the equation. So at least they know that, obviously, it's nothing personal, and they know that the coach loves them, and that they'll hang in there, and if or when they get their chances, they will go to war for their coach. And they also have that feeling of wanting to run through a wall for their coach, even though the coach has never made them a starter, for example.
Yeah, and I think, Gary, at this point, the audience knows I was on the bottom end of the roster on Bryant's team. I've mentioned it a lot of times, but no, you're exactly right, Gary. And I even remember maybe it was my second year with the team or third year with the team. And I had, fractured my kneecap playing futsal, right? So I was out for like 2 months. And I remember I texted Bryant saying like, hey, Bryant, like, I think I'm going to leave the team. Like, I'm already, I don't play that much, you know, like I'm not that important to the team. And Bryant texted me back immediately, like, Benny, like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, the team loves you. The team needs you, you know? So he does go that extra mile for every single player, no matter if you're the top player or bottom end of the roster, you know? And just the, getting that text from Bryant, it's like, damn, like, this guy does care about me, you know, and he wants the best for me, and not just for me, but for the entire team.
Yeah. And with respect to lip service, because sometimes coaches do a good sales job of this, you know, when they first meet the group or whatever, but it's precisely that, a sales job, and there's no follow-up. You know, there's no account. They don't hold themselves accountable for working harder than every player as a coach, caring about them on and off the field. It's just lip service, Ben. And if that happens, then it's game over. You are not going to, first off, the culture collapses right away, and you are not going to last there as a coach, and you're not going to be successful because the players won't go to war for you. If players don't go to war for you, then they don't pay attention to you, and then the team's not going to be unified, and they're not going to win games. And when they don't win games, then the club comes down on you and the parents come down on you because you're losing and losing and losing, and then the whole team falls apart, or you're just dismissed. See you later. Goodbye. I mean, how many times do we hear, and look, I have not coached at the professional level, but how many times do you hear over the course of years and years and years, oh, coach X, Y, and Z from Liverpool or Boca or the U.S. men's national team has lost the locker room. You always hear that expression. Oh, coach has lost the locker room. Well, guess what that means? It basically means that you had a cultural collapse, and most, I'm not going to say all the time, okay, but I would suggest that most of the time it probably does fall on the coach as to why there has been a collapse in there. There's other reasons why, you know, sometimes there are players who have a lot of power and accrue a lot of power because they have star power. Yes. And at that point, you know, the club obviously is more important than the coach, and the players are sometimes more important than the coach too when it comes to the professional game. And so if they have all that star power, they might choose to have a revolt because they don't like a particular thing that's going on. Maybe the coach is making them work too hard on the field, and they're like, man, I'm the star around here. I shouldn't be doing these sorts of sprints or these sorts of things. So they'll, just like parents in youth soccer, pro players will form coalitions as well and try to get the coach ousted at that point. But I know most of our audience cares about the youth game, so we'll stick with the youth. But I would also suggest that even if you're strictly youth, it's important for you to learn as much as you can about the pro game, because there's parallels like crazy. And if you do aspire, you want your kid to aspire to reaching the next level, and it doesn't have to be pro, it could be college, Benny. There's all these dynamics to be aware of. And the sooner you're aware of it, the better that you can guide your kid.
Yeah, but Gary, even at the youth level, there's star players on the team. And sometimes they aren't buying into the coach's culture and philosophy. And this is a dilemma that I think coaches deal with all the time. It's like, okay, you tell your kids at training, how do you get playing time? You know, you work hard, you show up on time, you be a good teammate. And, you know, there's so many kids that do that. But then you have like a star player, this fool shows up late. He's a dick to his teammates. He doesn't listen. But on the weekends, this guy produces, you know, 4 or 5 goals. So for a coach, how do you deal with this type of player? And also, how do you deal with the other players who are doing everything right, but they're just not as good as this kid?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It's a difficult problem. I think every situation is unique and different, because if you have a star player that's doing that, first and foremost, I'm already going to be questioning the coach a little bit as to why you can't keep them in check. I'm not going to say, oh, the coach sucks, he's terrible, he doesn't. No, because it's a difficult problem. Like once it's human nature, once a human knows that they're that important, then you look for shortcuts or you abuse your power, right? What's that expression? How does that expression go about power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely? So if you're like messy on your youth team compared to everybody else, and you win all the games for the team, you have power, and the parents have power, and the family has power to then say, yeah, you know what? Yeah, we are going to take that family vacation, not show up to the tournament because we can. And there's going to be no repercussions to us because little Johnny usually sucks. Who should we call the star player? Johnny's the worst on team. Who's the best on team?
Let's go with Jose.
Yeah, because Jose scores 10 goals a game, we're fine. We'll just show up next week and he'll play all game next week. So I think there's a lot of components there. One, I'm going to try not to use Brian, because I think Brian is like an outlier level coach that really is able to keep everybody in check, including the star player. I think you have to try to form a coalition with the parents that would be the route number one. Yeah, because the parents, obviously they're adults, they have a lot of life experience, and they'll understand the plight of the coach's situation a lot better. And what is usually best for their kid is not to abuse their power. And so from a development, you want to appease the parents' desire to develop their kid, right? And one of the ways to develop your kid is to not have your kid behave in such a manner. So that's kind of attack angle number one, is going to the parents. Sometimes the star player doesn't have parents present. So, okay, so there goes that strategy out the window. But he does get to training somehow, Ben. He's a youth player. So if it's not a parent, it's an uncle, it's a big brother, it's the dad or the parents of a teammate that take them to and from training. So that is the angle you take then. You speak to those folks because those folks are on the car ride with him there, on the car ride back. And probability is almost a certainty that the star player respects the person who takes them back and forth from training, back and forth from the games. And sometimes that person ends up being even more effective than the parents themselves, right? Because kids like to rebel against their parents at times. So I think you need that other adult in the room, and it could be potentially your assistant coach also that you deploy, or your assistant coaches that you deploy, or you deploy star players from the older teams to go and talk to the kid. It has to be a whole collective effort to try to right the ship. And then the method of last resort, I would say, is punishing the kid with playing time deprivation, right? Or saying, okay, you're not playing this week. I mean, use that tool, but you have to wield it with care, because that just might force the player to go into a worse spiral. You'd be like, oh yeah, coach, well, fuck you. No problem. You know, I won't play next week either. Oh, fuck you. I'll find another team. I'm out of here, you know, sort of thing. So that one has to be deployed carefully. Those are my thoughts initially, Ben.
Or, yeah. Or even, Gary, you sit the kid out for the entire game and your team ends up losing. And Jose comes at you. He's like, hey, you didn't play me, coach. What's up? You know?
Yeah, yeah. But again, the other factor to consider here is the teammates. And you also don't want the teammates to see that the star player is getting away with murder, you know, that he can do whatever right. He wants and gets played. So it's a delicate situation. And that's why I started off by saying every situation is unique and you have to use your best judgment as to how to do everything and keep the ship going north.
Right. So, okay, Gary, let's say Jose plays a 10, but also Johnny plays a 10, right? And we mentioned Jose's doing everything wrong at training. He's a dick. Bad attitude, but he still produces. Meanwhile, Johnny at training, he's the best teammate. He shows up early. He's putting in extra work. He's a great teammate. He's always giving 1,000% effort, but on the weekends, you know, he struggles. And so, you know, Johnny comes to you and says, coach, I'm doing everything that you're asking me to do, but, you know, Jose's playing over me. So how do you manage that situation with Johnny? Because eventually Johnny's going to be like kind of going to become jaded and say like, dude, I'm doing everything that you're asking me to do. I'm going above and beyond. I'm a great teammate. I have a great attitude. And you are the one that says, this is how you get on the field, but I'm not getting on the field. So how do you manage that situation with Johnny?
Well, I think it depends on the level of infraction of the star player also. So if it's an egregious infraction, then you play Johnny, you know, because if it's an egregious infraction, then ultimately you don't want Jose on the team. If this is what Jose is and what Jose does and what the family is and what the family does, ultimately you're going to look for, or you should look for, an escape valve, like of you actually releasing Jose. Jose, you're off the team. You're done, you know. But if it's like a minor infraction, he's late to training or whatever, maybe it's because he doesn't have a ride, you know, those sorts of things, like he has a complicated situation off the field, then that's a different story. And then you mentioned, Johnny's saying, hey, you know, you said, you know, if you work hard, you get on the field. Well, I would never say that. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying the only thing that you can control is how hard you work. And that's obviously a prerequisite, but that does not guarantee you anything, right? There are no guarantees here. But Yeah, man. And you have to sense what kind of a Johnny that you got. Do you have the kind of Johnny that's going to, you know, develop that sort of sentiment and to what degree? And then you try to get ahead of it. You don't wait until Johnny comes to you and say, hey, what the F, coach? You know, I think you want to go to Johnny first and explain to him the situation one way or the other. But yeah, man, look, and for, I said I didn't want to talk about Brian because he's an outlier, but Brian would sit players. Brian would be like, oh, no, sorry, you're not playing today. No, I don't think he would say you're not playing today, but maybe you're not starting today. You see what I'm saying? Like, and it's not like you're not playing until the 70th minute sort of thing, the star player. Nah, he just, I think he would, if I remember correctly, he just wouldn't start you. And then you go in 15 minutes later, you know, in the first half, you're already on the field, but he wouldn't start you. And just the fact that he wouldn't start you seemed to be a strong enough message to the star player and seemed to be a strong enough message to the whole team, right? Ooh, shit, Efra's not starting or something like that, right? But he goes in 15 minutes later, you know what I'm saying, to play the whole game and rescue the game. So that's another possibility.
Yeah, man. The bench is the most powerful coaching tool. Dude. It wakes players up, you know, so fast for sure. But just the last thing, the good thing about Johnny's is that usually they aren't the ones coming to complain to you about playing time, you know, and usually they are the ones that are ride or die and they trust the coach and trust in the plan. So, but I think, like you said, getting ahead of it and making sure like you recognize their hard work and you recognize their good attitude, I think that's huge. Because if you're kind of just ignoring that player, then that's when they're going to start to become upset and frustrated with the minutes. But usually they're the ones that aren't complaining about playing time.
Yeah, what I like to say in kind of most walks of life is don't allow people to develop their own Hollywood movie in their minds about what's going on, because people get really creative and create all kinds of scenarios and movies in their head of reality. Instead, what you want to do is you inject the movie yourself. You with me? So it's just key, because humans are interesting, man. It'll just spiral out of control. If you leave them in the dark, they start developing all these fantasy worlds in their head about what's happening. And it's usually so detached from reality because we're all human, we're biased. So you bias your Hollywood movie that you generate for yourself in favor of you. You're the hero and everybody else is the villain at that point. And then once you have that movie developed, it's hard for you to throw it out the window because you developed it. You cling on to it. So how about you as the coach or you as a leader, you develop the movie and you give them the movie first, yeah, and have their neurons wired with your movie of reality first. And then it's a little bit harder for them to create their own and make themselves the hero and you're the villain.
You go Clint Eastwood on their ass, aren't you?
Sick. Yeah, I don't know. It's just so interesting, man. Once how you start viewing life after reading so much, so many books, and after, you know, living so much and having so many of these experiences, both positive and negative, that I guess it's called wisdom. Maybe I'm getting a little salt of wisdom here or there. It's quite interesting because you don't think about this stuff when you're 20 or 25 years old. You have no idea.
Yeah, for sure, Gary. So you mentioned a good point that, you know, Brian is kind of an outlier case. And obviously every club team in the United States right now doesn't have this culture that Brian had with all this team. So what are some of the big problems in terms of culture that you've seen with youth teams? You know, for example, I think a lot of teams on the competitive youth scene right now, it seems like their culture, like, for example, like the parents feel like they can, you know, sideline coach or say whatever they want to the coach, or, you know, it just doesn't seem like the right culture or a good enough culture to be successful in youth soccer. You know, what are some of the problems that you've seen? Obviously you've been out of the youth game for a while, but I'm sure you've heard stories or other cases where the culture is just completely wrong.
Well, I don't think, like I mentioned before, right? Like I moved on to working at the professional level with professional players, with clubs at the pro level, with partners overseas doing things at the professional level. So I have been out of the youth game for a bit, but I don't think that matters, because I don't think human nature changes. And I don't think the organizations and the structures of the youth system here in the States has changed. So it all stays the same, right, Benny? So I can just lean on my 20 years in youth coaching or whatever, and it's going to be true today. I think the number one issue, Ben, like I've always said, is that youth soccer here in the States, it is all transaction related. It's a business, and the business has customers, and the parents are just transactions. There's numbers on a spreadsheet that bring in a certain amount of revenue, and that's basically the end of the whole story. So from that perspective, the culture of the club, the business itself, trickles down to the coaches. And then from the coaches, it trickles down to the team, families, and players, Ben. So everything that we just finished discussing in the first 25 minutes or so here usually doesn't exist in youth soccer in America. Usually you don't have the coach doing all the things that we just finished describing in 25 minutes, at least not to the degree and the level that we're emphasizing, meaning a level of excellence, okay? Yes, they will try to establish a culture, of course. Will they be effective at it? Well, probably not. And it's a function of two things. One is personal charisma, which is very important, because you can try to do all these things, but if you're a monotone, you know, boring ass high school history teacher sort of guy, who's going to run through a wall for that guy? Probably not so many. You have to have that charisma of a Pep Guardiola, of a Jose Mourinho, of a Jurgen Klopp, just to mention, you know, faces that people can recognize. And so that's one end. But the most important one is, why is the coach going to put in 40, 50, 60 hours a week for his two or three teams in order for him to operate the whole team at a level of excellence? There's no incentive to do that, Benny. And that is what causes terrible team culture and club culture. And that's what I see or have seen forever in youth soccer. So you have parents on the sidelines screaming and yelling, coaches, you know, either on one extreme, yelling like the example that you gave last time, having little girls do push-ups because somebody messes up. And on the other extreme, coaches on the sidelines just sitting on their lawn chair, not saying a single word the entire game, which is like, you're not even a coach, okay? But they've somehow swindled a good portion of the market here to think that if a coach is sitting on the sideline not saying anything, that's a good coach, because he's letting them play, because he's letting them discover. It's a swindle, Benny, okay? So, and it's part of not wanting to be excellent, because there's no reward for being an excellent coach here. So cultural collapse in all its flavors originates from the relationship, the business relationship that is youth soccer here. And I need to inject it, because for folks who are new to the podcast, and even folks who've been here for a while, they need to hear repeatedly, all of this is a consequence, not of pay to play, okay? Because pay to play is also a consequence, but all of this is a consequence of there being no promotion and relegation at the professional level. It is all tied to that, because if there was promotion relegation at the professional, senior, adult level, all of these quote unquote youth clubs here in the States, or not all of them necessarily, but a huge swath of them, especially the big ones, would have an adult team themselves. They would have a first team themselves operating somewhere in the pyramid, whether it be the first division MLS, whether it be the second division USL Championship, or the third division USL League One, or the fourth division MPSL, all these other leagues that are forming. They would have something in the pyramid, and then the club is incentivized to develop youth players for their first team. The business incentives are now to have a successful first team. How do you have a successful first team? Well, by, especially if you don't have the money, Benny, especially if you don't have the money of a billionaire who could just buy players on the international market. If you don't have that, you are reliant on your youth system to feed your first team. So now you want your best possible coaches to operate at a level of excellence so that they have good team culture, proper team culture, so that they develop the best possible individual players, so that maybe a small percentage of them graduate to the first team. And furthermore, if you have a first team, you can now form everybody in the youth setup feels like a community because you're all incentivized, or the club should incentivize, have them go to first team games. So imagine a youth club who has 20 teams on it or 50 teams on it or whatever. So now you have like 500 parents or 1,000 parents, whatever it is, and players, all of them on the weekend go and watch the first team play, even if it's fourth division, Benny. So now you have a unified actual club, and that builds proper culture. We don't have proper culture here, Benny, because that doesn't exist.
Yes. Incredible rant, Gary. I might make that last 5 minutes a whole episode on YouTube, but
sure.
I want to pluck something out. I know you mentioned a lot there, but I'm so glad you brought this up because I don't think we have before. It's just this whole idea of coaches like sitting on their ass the entire game. It drives me fucking nuts, Gary. Like, I don't know how apparent. There's some coaches, you see them at tournaments and it's every single game. It's not just a one-off. Every single game, they plop their chair down, they give the lineup, they sit down for the entire game, not saying a word. You know, it drives me insane, Gary. Like, even if you look at like a Champions League game, you're going to see the two managers in their little box standing next to each other. And okay, a team scores a goal. Okay, they go and sit down for 5 seconds, sip of water. They look at their goal on the iPad, and then they're right back up. But I think coaches, like you just mentioned, they get away with it because they probably brainwash the parents saying, oh, you know, they're young. You got to let them play. You got to let them figure it out. But how fucking lazy can you be, Gary, to just sit on your ass the entire game? It's nuts. And not only that, Gary, but you see some of them like on their phone scrolling through Instagram posts during the game. I'm like, what are we doing? How can you be a parent and you're basically paying somebody to babysit your kids and just watch the game with you? You know, it's nuts.
Ben, it's the biggest swindle/scam I have ever seen in youth soccer here in America. And there's plenty of them, but that is the biggest one because they were able to get U.S. soccer. They were able to get MLS. They were able to get the media, the whole freaking ball of wax was aimed at creating content and brainwashing the entire ecosystem that the best thing to do is to do nothing, basically. No, seriously. Oh, the game is the best teacher, is the biggest scam on earth, Ben, is the biggest swindle on earth. And I know where they pulled it from. And I don't want to say it was necessarily intentional, although a lot of it was intentional, but you go overseas or you hear reports or you hear testimonials of very famous soccer people overseas claiming how they developed, like Zinedine Zidane or you name it. It's like, oh yeah, well, nobody really taught me these sorts of things. And I think, you know, the best thing to do is for the kids to just play and play a lot without the supervision of adults or parents or whatever. And they're describing pickup mostly, right? And so folks here in the States grabbed that and ran with it. They just said, oh, well, that's what we should do in our competitive club environments then. Like, don't do a goddamn thing. They'll just develop magically on their own. And they completely conflated what folks overseas were saying and used it and leveraged it so that you here in the States don't have to do shit. And everybody bought it hook, line, and sinker. And the parents bought it hook, line, and sinker as well, because it's hard. It's hard, Ben. If you don't have subject matter expertise and you're reading articles coming out of the LA Times or you're reading articles coming out of these soccer publications, the mainstream ones, and you're hearing, you know, quotes coming from famous Ronaldo overseas or whatever, taken out of context, you know, you're like, oh, well, I guess that's how it goes. And on top of that, they love the notion of their kid not being, I mean, their kid being coddled and not being held responsible or accountable or being quote unquote yelled at, you know, or being, they kind of like it being soft, Ben. And what's softer than the coach just sitting on the sidelines and letting everybody do whatever the hell they want to do? It's such a swindle. It has, you know how it's driving you crazy? It has driven me crazy for 15 years. I don't know when it started, but it started a long time ago, this whole scam about guided discovery. or this whole scam about let the players play, or this whole scam about it's a player's game. You heard that one, Ben? Oh, this is a player's game. What are you talking about? What do you mean it's a player's game? What do you mean it's a player's game? I know what they mean, but they took it to the extreme, Benny, so that nobody has to work.
Right. Yeah, Gary. I mean, within the context of pickup, of course, you know, let the kids play, and especially in futsal, pickup, going to the park with friends, you know, that is when it's okay. It's like, all right, yeah, they're figuring it out on their own. But if you're in a competitive club environment and your coach is saying nothing, get your bags and leave immediately. I mean, it's shocking, Gary. Shocking.
Just imagine, Ben, and I don't know, just imagine if you found out, I mean, I don't know, parents, the culture nowadays is so fucked up, who knows, but if you found out as a dad or mom that, you know, your kid is going to math class in elementary school or high, whatever level, going to math class, and the teacher's kind of like, okay, guys, do some math. I'll have at it. What? Excuse me? Just, you know, yeah, they'll figure out calculus on their own. You know, they'll come up and discuss. The analogy is kind of like, guys, the kids, if just left alone, you know, they will, you guide them a little bit, right? But eventually they'll naturally figure out and discover calculus by themselves. They'll invent it by themselves. They'll invent differential geometry. They'll invent partial differential equations. They'll invent tensor analysis on their own. It'll just naturally, they'll get there. It's kind of similar. Oh, just leave everybody alone, and just organically and naturally, magically, they'll come to understand all the principles of playing out of the back, and, you know, attacking patterns, and, you know, how to have a, I don't know, how to receive properly, how to deliver a pass properly, how to work together collectively as a team, unified under one philosophy, one methodology to be impactful. Like, just magically, it's all going to come together. Those 11-year-olds, man, just give them a little bit of time and they're going to figure it all out.
Gary, just let the kids solve the quadratic formula. You know, it'll come to them. They'll learn.
Just naturally, man. And teachers, don't you dare show them. No chance.
Unbelievable, Gary. Oh, man.
No, but this
anyway,
is a, but
yeah,
you opened
right.
No, but you opened up the episode wanting to talk about dive a little bit deeper into culture. This is all cultural. The cultural That's problem.
That's true. You mentioned, Gary, this notion of soccer at the youth competitive levels being a transactional relationship. And this is also part of the cultural problem that I think, since parents are the ones that are paying the coach's salary, I think parents feel like they should have more say in how the team gets coached, in the lineup, in the positions that their players play. And I mean, I think, Gary, if you go overseas, you're never going to see a parent, their thoughts of, oh, you know, my son should be playing left back, not right back. And I think parents feel this power because they are paying so much money. Do you agree? Or I think that's a huge cultural problem that we're seeing.
Well, yeah, we had a whole episode on that. I don't know, it was two episodes back or something like that. Folks should, I'd encourage them to listen into that. But sure, pay-to-play fosters this cultural problem in the States. But I remind everybody, pay-to-play is not the root issue. Pay-to-play is a consequence of not having promotion relegation at the pro level. It is a consequence of that. Do you, for those in the audience, oh, that's not true. Guys, I'm not saying with promotion relegation at the pro level that all of pay-to-play will disappear. No, pay-to-play will always exist. It'll always exist in some capacity, but it won't exist at the level and scale that it currently exists, Benny. That's all. And that's all that matters is, hey, we have an issue. How do we get rid of the issue? You're not going to get rid of it completely, but what if you reduced it by 30% or 50% or 75%? That's what's at hand here, Ben.
Yeah, Gary, I think parents can really make or break like a whole team dynamic. I think back to when Danny was coaching with Brian and they had their TFA team. I remember going to, and it was on a Saturday, Gary. I mean, the team didn't have any games or any tournaments, but they met up at a local high school. Every single parent was there to watch training, but not only watch training, Gary, some of them like brought a grill, they brought food, music. And you could just tell that, like, the whole team, like, the siblings were there, the cousins were there, not to watch a game or a tournament, but because the kids had training. And I think just that whole team dynamic, it helps the players even more, especially on the field on the weekends, because you feel this whole support system behind you. You feel connected to everybody on the team, and they're all hanging out with each other, versus you have other teams where the parents show up on the weekends for the games and nobody even talks to each other because everybody's at ends with each other. And, oh, your son is playing more than my son today, or your daughter said this to my daughter, so now I'm not going to talk to you on the weekend. And that, I think that just ruins the whole team dynamic. I think if you can have families that are, and again, you don't have to be best friends, but families that care about each other and want to see the success of each other's kids, I think it makes the team so much more enjoyable, not just for the parents, but also for the kids, you know, because if you're a kid and you see your dad like bickering with another dad, it's like, dude, you feel horrible, you know? And it's like, why are you doing this? I just want to play. I just want to be here with my teammates. So, you know, what role do the parents play, Gary, in the culture of the team? It's huge, no?
It's massive, Ben. It's massive. So that's why you can't neglect the parents.
Right.
You can't neglect the parents. You have to educate them, teach them. And just like with the players, you have to make them feel valued and loved as well, which is something that Brian, I think, did to an extraordinary level. And look, it's hard to connect with everybody because everybody comes from different walks of life and have different experiences, but everybody has some sort of common ground, you know, and I think the common ground is always their kids. And so you both have that in common. And so somehow, some way you make it about them if you can't connect on another level. And what I'm thinking about when I say those things is, when I return back to Brian and his capability for this, one thing that was very important was his bilingual nature, you know, fluent in Spanish, obviously, as well, being the son of Argentines. And the primary demographic on his teams, not always, because he had that girls team where it's not true. And he also had the early or the latter Rage team that wasn't true, or the Fury, right? It's called. Yeah. But the primary demographic of his top crack teams were Latino in nature, and most of the parents spoke Spanish. So from their vantage point, it's awesome. It's like, oh man, we have a coach who's fluent in Spanish and knows a shit ton about soccer. And that is an instant icebreaker and instantly bonds you, right? You have a cultural bond. And then with the non-Latino families, Brian was very good too with them, honestly speaking, because Brian is American, born and raised here, and it's not an issue at all. And as Argentines, you know, we're white as well, Ben, if I'm being honest. And, you know, sometimes maybe it's in my imagination, but I don't think so. You know, Caucasian families, you know, you have a Latino coach, and, you know, principally, where's that Latino coach from? It might be, you know, from Mexico or Central America or some part of the world whose heritage is people of color, right? They're not white people. And that, I'm not going to say there's friction, Benny. I'm just saying there's something to that. I don't know what it is. And I know people want to tread carefully when they talk about skin color and stuff like that, because it's stupid. It doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter at all. But it seems like there's something there. I don't know.
You mean like in terms of like where they come from?
I'll give you an example. So if somebody doesn't know me, and then all of a sudden I start speaking fluent Spanish, you see in their facial expression or the reaction, they're like, what the fuck? Like you can speak like fluid Spanish. Okay. So, and then they actually confess, like, I was shocked. Like, you're speaking Spanish. Okay. What does that communicate, Benny? That communicates clearly that, you know, there's some pattern matching thing going on in everybody's mind, where if you are brown, okay, if you're speaking Spanish, you're not shocked because you've seen that pattern a million bajillion times, but you may have not have seen, I mean, you didn't have a pattern forming algorithm in your head where some total white dude with blue eyes starts fluently flowing in Spanish. You know, it your brain, there's a little trigger that fires in there. It's like, oh, I haven't seen that pattern. Like, this is different. This is weird. So that's really what I'm getting at here.
Okay, I'll have to send you this video. There's a guy on Instagram, and that's like, he's like a total white guy, and he'll go to like Chinese restaurants, and he's like talking to the waiter in English, you know, and then all of a sudden he just starts speaking like fluent Mandarin, and you see the other customers, they're like, what the fuck?
No, and this is what's it's funny. Like, why do we have to tread carefully about these things? Oh, because the word racism comes into your mind, or prejudice or bigotry. I'm like, it has nothing to do with any of that. It has to do with, you know, pattern matching. Like, how many times have you seen the white guy speaking fluent Mandarin, you know, at you? Like, zero, maybe, in your entire life. So your brain gets broken in that instant. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing racist about that. It's just reality.
For sure. Gary, I think every team out there, especially all the audience listening, I feel like every team has, you know, a toxic parent. How do you deal with this parent? You know, especially if the kid is one of the best on the team and you don't want to lose this kid, how do you deal with this parent who's constantly, you know, stirring up the pot, causing drama, talking shit on the coach behind the coach's back, or talking shit on other players on the team to other parents? How do you deal with this parent without, you know, affecting the kid? Because oftentimes it's not the kid's fault. It's usually the parent. And I'm sure every team out there has one parent where it's like, man, this guy or this mom, she's just toxic. You know, how do you deal with that as a coach?
Everybody's different. Look, I'm kind of a black and white guy when it comes to many things. I don't like pussyfooting around and, you know, allowing things to fester and saying, oh no, I can change this person. You know, let me talk to them and educate them over the course of weeks and months, and who knows how long you think it'll take. In my experience, if it's a situation like you just described, they don't come around, Benny. They don't come around. You don't turn those people around. They are what they are. And the sooner that you can cut the infection from the team, the better. Yes, it gets difficult when it's the best player in your team. And then you have to make a judgment call, like, how much would this impact the team? Because if he's like Messi on the team, that's one thing. But if he's the best player on the team, but you know what? When he doesn't play or he's not here, something, we're still competitive. We're still pretty good. We can still win games. You can still make it happen. Then that, in that scenario, you cut your losses, you dismiss them, you're done. But if it's a messy scenario, Jesus Christ, okay, now it's complicated, because dismissing that person basically will ultimately lead to your entire team folding. Yeah, if he's gone, you go from winning every game or almost every game to winning less than half of your games, or being the worst team in the league at that point. And guess what's going to happen? Everybody else revolts, because just that's how it is. And you have no team anymore. So how do you deal with it? And you try your best to turn the parent around. And if you can't do it, you just have to swallow it and stomach it, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, Gary, that's what I was going to bring up, is like, anytime a top player on the team leaves, like let's say Jose leaves the team, all the other parents start panicking. They're like, oh my gosh, Jose, he's leaving the team. What does this mean? Does this mean the coach isn't that good? Should I follow Jose? Should I start looking for a new team? So it's complete panic mode, you know, especially if the top player is leaving. And yeah, so that's the hard part, is like, you can only allow this toxic parent to do so much without hurting the team. But then if this kid leaves, everybody starts to panic, and you see a whole team's folding because of one player leaving.
The other thing that is unfortunate too is when one doesn't have deep subject matter expertise. And I'm going to paint the parents with this broad brush. Let's assume that a team's parents aren't experts in soccer, okay? And then they see Jose, who's the best player, and that the parents of Jose, let's say it's the dad, okay? The dad is unhappy with things. The dad is toxic, talking shit about the coach, talking shit here and there and everywhere. And then Jose ends up leaving. what gets played also potentially gets played in the head of the remaining parents is, well, if Jose's the best player on the team, then the dad must know something because his kid is really, really good. And if the dad leaves the team and has talked all this shit on the coach, well, he might be right. You know, our coach might be an idiot, might not know what he's actually doing. And Jose's dad does know what he's doing. And so we're going to follow Jose's dad. I mean, it happens, Ben, because humans are like, follow the leader. You know, they're kind of wired for that. And they just see that person as the leader because the kid is the best player on the team. And they're like, well, we want to do what's best for our kid. And clearly he's been doing great with his kid because his kid is the best. So I'm going to follow Jose's dad. That is also an ingredient. I'm not saying that is the ingredient, but that also plays in the minds of people.
Yeah. What advice, Gary, would you have for parents who maybe they don't know that much about soccer or they never played, but they want to support? Because you mentioned, right, a lot of parents don't have experience and they don't know what to look for, certain things that should be happening. So for those parents, how can they best support the development of their kids? Well, especially if they've never been around a team or they don't have any experience in soccer, but their kid loves it.
Well, number one, if they're listening to the 343 podcast, you're way ahead of the curve already. If you're absorbing it deeply religiously and playing the episodes over and over again, because it takes more than one listen, in my opinion, or more than one read of an article or more than one view of a game to really develop yourself and develop your eye as a parent. And it's a big problem, Ben. I don't have that answer. Which is why I ventured out and try to create an entire online program for them, you know, based on all of our experience at every single level, at both genders. And when I mean every single level, I do mean every single level, from the rec level at the youth level to the absolute top of the country's pyramid and the top team and players on the top of the country's pyramid at the different age groups from U9 to U18. And then now a decade's worth of experience of operating at the professional level. We've seen the entire cradle to grave, you know, multiple times. And I'm trying to codify that all in the masterclass, Ben, in the masterclass, so that parents can hop on board and start acquiring all of this knowledge and experience in a compressed form. Because I'm trying to identify what are the principles, what are the most important things, and capturing it there. Do I have it perfect? Absolutely not. Do I have it near perfect? Absolutely not. Is there a lot of development that still needs to be done? Absolutely. Absolutely, Benny. It's a great unsolved problem, dude. You're basically asking me, how do you take somebody from zero or minimal expertise to a level of competence to guide somebody in an area where you are not an expert in the area? It's very tough, dude. It's not soccer related. Imagine somebody who knows nothing about math or nothing about physics or nothing about, you name a topic, okay? You're asking me, okay, how do you get that parent up to speed to be able to guide their kid in those subject areas? It's fucking difficult, dude, but I'm trying.
Nah, Gary, it's easy. Gee, you just let them do it. They'll figure it out.
Just let them play, man. Well, look at the situation we find ourselves in American soccer, because we have been letting them play. There has been no parent education in American soccer. There has been no education, period, in American soccer. Coaching or otherwise, all this stuff about U.S. soccer licenses, you think that going to a fucking day-long course to get a license, or even a week-long course, or even a month-long course to get a particular license, whether it be D, C, B, or A, you think that makes a good coach? You think that educates a coach and levels them up? That doesn't do jack diddly squat, Benny. It's like saying this, and I know all analogies are flawed, but it drives the point home. It's like saying, hey, we're going to offer a D license, or an e-license, or whatever it is, in math, okay? Come in for a day, you know, we'll show you some stuff, you know, and then you go off and teach 20 kids about math, but you don't know anything about math, Benny. Like, how is that going to work? Or, hey, we're not talking about a day. Let's go for the A license in math now. Come on in. You know, it'll be a month-long process or 3-month-long process or 6-month-long process. However, let's just go crazy, Benny. Let's go crazy. Let's say it's a 6-month-long thing to get your A license in math. You think in 6 months, you are now an expert in math without knowing much at all, and you're going to go out there into the world and be one of the premier math guys? It's fucking ludicrous what gets away as something legitimate. Here in the States, it's absolutely crazy. I'll end with this, Ben, because the license thing really gets me worked up. I have to have a whole episode on licensing. It is 100% not about education. It is about gatekeeping. It is about the Federation, some organization, the monopoly, being able to gatekeep who gets to coach where and how much. And that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. And nothing more than that. And it's unfortunate that coaches buy this hook, line, and sinker. And then on their social media profiles, they put, USSF B license, their UEFA Pro course here, or that course over there. Or I went to the French course and now look at me. I know we're talking about parents and team culture and stuff, but that's part of the culture, Ben, because parents here in the States all of a sudden look at that like, he got his U.S. Soccer A license. He must like, that's a good one right there. What? You crazy, man. This is bananas.
Yeah. Why do the gatekeepers, Gary, why did they care so much who is able to coach? Is it because they want yes men within their system, or what's the reason?
Yeah, it's a filtration process and just basic economics. So scarcity creates value, right? So if you can limit the supply of, in this case, humans with a particular credential, if you can limit that supply, then you yourself who have that credential are more valued in the ecosystem. And yes, it also, if you can determine who gets to be in the club and who doesn't get to be in the club, then you as the bureaucrat, as the politician, as the power broker, get to develop your own culture of nepotism, your own culture of, I don't want to be exposed as a fraud, so I need other frauds to be around me, and we all have to play this game. That has nothing to do with meritocracy, Benny. So how do you do that? You create gates, and you get to pick and choose who comes in and who comes out. And do you want yes men? Of course these people want yes men. The bureaucrats always want yes men, because yes men don't expose you as a fraud.
Sounds like we need a whole episode on licensing coming soon.
No, 100%. I actually want to reach out to, remember Rory, who I recorded with, you know, he's in the medical profession. So there's licensing like crazy in the medical profession. But I think there are certain domains where licensing is good. And those domains are things that are in the public interest or in the best public interest, because you can't have, I mean, you need some sort of gatekeeping when it comes to health. For instance, you can't have some quack saying, oh, I know how to operate on your liver. Come on into my house over here. I'll take care of it for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, you need gates for that. Law probably need gates in the law as well, because look, now you have a human being's potential life on your hands because they're being sued or they're being prosecuted and they might go to jail for God knows how long. You want somebody competent to protect you. But when we're talking about soccer, get the fuck out of here. Like, what are you talking about? Nobody's gonna die. Okay, if you want to go and have, hey, every coach has to have a CPR course or first aid and those sorts of things, awesome, great, all for it, absolutely. But you're not operating on anybody here. What are we doing with these licenses?
All right, brother, great episode.
All right, Benjamin.
Our last one, I got a lot of good feedback on YouTube. So, you know, we appreciate all the comments coming in and inspires us to keep going.
Yeah. And I hope folks start realizing also that your comments actually stimulate the next episodes. So give us your comments, give us your thoughts, because then we know where your pain points actually are and what your philosophy, your points of view are. And then we'll riff on those sorts of things in the coming episodes, which I think helps everybody out.
Yes, sir. All right, brother. Make sure that you use your office.
Yeah, you got it, man.
My new spot, Jake.
Just stare at the whiteboard at those equations, and it'll just magically happen for you. You'll understand. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.